Blog Talk Radio.
Festival 2, Love, Lust, and Lovers. This is Beverly Black, the creator of Tribe Family Channel, and it is an honor and privilege to be with you this evening for our final episode of this season's Literary Festival. This is a special, special final show, as I have a wonderful, wonderful Essence best-selling co-host that I'm going to bring on, and she is going to interview our guest, award-winning author of romance, chick lit, and so much more. So before I get into the introductions, let me just take the time to thank all of the participants that have had their voice heard on Tribe Family Channel, this literary festival. I want to thank Joylynn Ross. I want to thank Patricia Bridewell for making this a season to remember for us. I want to thank them for their sponsorship. And I want to thank my co-host, who I'm about to introduce, for her sponsorship. So let me tell you all about our co-host. Christian comedian, Sister Betty, Essence best-selling author of God's Calling You Again, Mother Eternal and Everlasting's Dead, Cruising on Desperation, Somewhat Saved, Somebody Sinning in My Bed, Don't Blame the Devil, No Ordinary Noel, Holy Mayhem, Sister Betty Says I Do, just to name a few. Yes, I am talking about Essence best-selling author and award-winning Christian comedian, Sister Betty. She's a music industry veteran, a former member of Arlene Smith and the Chantels, fantasy and several gospel groups. She's a playwright, songwriter, music producer, and so much more. God has placed so much upon her. It is an honor, privilege, and a pleasure to have Sister Pat Georgie Walker here on Tribe Family Channel. What's happening, my sister?
Well, my dear, I am excited. I have been almost tasting this moment since the moment that you asked me to please do this. Girl, I have been stalking this author, our guest for tonight, for years. I have an author crush on her. I am not ashamed to say it. I tell the world, and Lord knows I will tweet it in a heartbeat. Now,
well,
we all
know what?
What, honey?
Wait, because I'm so excited, and because we are limited for time, and I've been, like, so excited with you, let me let our audience, first of all, know that this special show is sponsored by Pat, Sister Betty Georgie Walker, and I want you to be sure to visit her online. She's going to shout out her social media websites and links for you to connect in. And so without further ado, Sister Pat, Georgie Walker, I want to turn this show over to you and our guests for your introduction.
Well, listening audience, get ready, get ready, get ready. It's about to go down because this is not just a tribe. This is a family, and we're about to do what families do tonight. We're going to get all up in her business. Now, we all know that words matter, and I want to share with you the words that I first read from Bernice McFadden. Oh, my goodness. I call her the queen of the first 100 words. So without further ado, before we even hear her beautiful voice, I'm going to read this. Check this out, y'all. Jude was dead. On a day when the air held a promise of summer and people laughed aloud, putting aside for a brief moment their condition, color, and where they ranked among humanity, Jude, dangling on the end of childhood and reaching out toward womanhood, should have been giggling with others her age among the sassafras, or dipping her bare feet in Hodges Lake and shivering against the winter chill it still clutched. Instead, she was dead. Girl, oh my goodness. That's even less than 100 words. For all of y'all who know anything about good writing, storytelling, somebody that can really string words together and make you feel something, I now introduce to you the queen herself, Miss Beverly. Now, you know I'm excited. Miss Bernice McFadden. Bernice, welcome, darling.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for that fabulous introduction, Pat. Hello,
well,
Beverly.
You see, I get
thank
excited
you.
When I start talking to you.
Hello, ladies, and I want to thank you both for being here. And I'm going to step back into the audience and allow you two to have this conversation. I will cut in when a caller raises their hand, so you don't have to announce it from the conversation. I'll just cut in and enjoy this moment, ladies. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Beverly, I forgot to get her off my mind. Bernice, see, I call you queen. That's what messes me up, because I call you queen. But Bernice, for those who don't know that you're a queen, I know about you, but I want the listening audience to learn about you. So how did you get started?
Well, I've been writing since I was 9. I've been reading since I was 4. And I just loved it. I loved reading, and writing just seemed to be the natural next step. I was very shy. I was a shy kid, and I really preferred staying inside with my books and then later staying inside creating my stories. I told my mother at the age of 9 that I was going to be a writer, and, you know, parents, they're like, yeah, okay. That's what you're going to do. So it's just something that's been with me for a very long time. And it's not to say that I didn't try to walk away, because as you know, Pat, it's a difficult road.
Okay,
lots of rejection.
Now.
But I think that my childhood prepared me for the rejection. So I had
a tough
skin.
Are you from a big family?
I'm the eldest of 4.
Okay.
But my family is fairly large. My grandparents and great aunts and uncles and cousins, yeah.
Well, are there any storytellers in your family? I mean, you have such a gift of putting together words that evoke so much emotion. Is that just you, or is there somebody else in the family that does that too?
I think that all of my family members are storytellers. And, to take that a step further, I think black people on a whole are storytellers. No matter where I go, when I'm visiting my folk, they tell great stories, whether they be, African Americans or Caribbean folk or Africans. they tell fabulous stories. I think we are just natural born storytellers.
Well, I don't know about that, because when my family gets together, they just lie. You know, they just lie. I mean, you can dress it up and call it storytelling if you want to, but they just lie.
But those lies morph into great stories.
Well, I'll tell you something. My third grade teacher, who passed away about a month ago, told me that she always knew I was going to be a writer because I was the biggest liar she had in the third grade. So, but now back to you. Well, you know, like I said, I've been stalking you for years, and you travel a lot.
Yeah.
And sometimes I get a little jealous because you send these fabulous pictures, and you're writing here and you're writing there. When do you know it's time to hit the road to kind of, you know, get the juices flowing?
I'll write wherever I am, but I hit the road to clear my mind, to center myself. That's my sanity. And I love to immerse myself in other cultures. I love to meet other people. You know, I just like to travel around and meet folk. And what I find more often than not is that I'll come back with some sliver of enlightenment that will end up in my novels. So in my head, you know, I'll go, you know, clear across the world and hear one line, and I'm like, that's such a fabulous line, and it'll find its way into one of my books. So I'm like,
this is why
I had to take this trip.
Talking about traveling and trips and experiences and whatnot, I was amazed to learn that your book, the one that I hold near and dear as the epitome of storytelling, Sugar, had received rejection letters. What were they thinking?
75.
Girl,
yeah.
It made me want to go back and just slap all 75 of them. Were they crazy?
Well, you know, publishing... publishing, you would think it was a creative industry, and I now know 16 years in that it's not. They want what's already out there. They're like, this did well, we want more of that. And,
cookie
you know,
cutter,
one
yeah.
of the examples is like The Girl on the Train. That did so well. Now you have all of these copycats that are being picked up and made into movies. So no, they just want more of the same. And so that was my issue. Sugar did not fit into their idea of, quote, I'm doing air quotes here, of African American literature. And so the majority of the rejection letters I received basically said there was no audience for this book. Nobody's going to read this.
Idiots.
I was told to go and read what was popular, you know, change it up, and then resubmit.
You know, I find that to be an insult to an author
mm-hmm.
when somebody says go and read what is popular and then write that.
Yeah.
Where is the creativity? Where is your
voice? They're
not
interested in that.
One thing I learned when I met years ago with Maya Angelou, and one of the pieces of advice that she gave me was to always be true.
That's right.
Be honest. And it took me years to figure out what that woman meant until somebody wanted me to do something that somebody else had done. Well, fortunately,
mm-hmm.
I didn't, so, you know, I kind of created my own niche. But when I started reading the background, the history, the Sugar, my jaw dropped.
Yeah.
Because I know for me, the first 100 words, and I got to tell you, it was Tracy Price Thompson who's told me, she said, you want to know what good writing is? She said, you read the first 100 words of Bernice McFadden's Sugar. So I'm saying, yeah, okay, yeah, fine, whatever. Girl, here it is, how many years later, and I'm still talking about Sugar?
Thank you, Pat.
That book is classic. And all those out there who are listening, if you have not read it, please go do yourself a favor. read that story. It is fabulous. And the thing that I really love about it are the lessons. The lessons were good for back then, it's good for now, and it'll be good for later on.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes a classic.
Yes, and Sugar for me is a classic. I don't let nobody mess with Sugar. I don't let nobody mess with The Warmest December. I don't let nobody mess with Bernice McFadden's book. You want to borrow it? Tough. Go to the library or buy your own copy. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you about Sugar, and then we're going to move on because people think that's the only book you ever wrote. But how did it feel to have someone like Terry McMillan endorse it?
Let me tell you, you know, life is so interesting. It's so magical. My life, anyway, I feel my life is very magical. And I remember reading Mama, Terry McMillan's first book, and I was blown away by it. It's still my favorite book of hers. And then I went out and bought Disappearing Acts. And I was fiending at that point. And I remember going into Barnes & Noble's. It was right across the street from where I was working. And I was like, you know, is there another book by this author? And I think, you know, 3 or 4 months later was Waiting to Exhale. And so I was entranced by that book as well. And so, you know, fast forward however many years it was, for her to – I remember she had posted somewhere – and she said, I'm reading this book, Sugar, by Bernice McFadden. She said, I have it in the car with me. I'm reading it at stoplights. And I was just flabbergasted because she didn't know, just like, you know, so many other writers, they didn't know that they were my teachers. She was one of my teachers. We didn't even know each other. But she was one of my teachers. I learned a lot from her, her and other authors. And so yeah, I was just, you know, I was astounded that someone who I admired really loved the book and wanted to put her stamp on it. So it was fabulous.
Well, in case the listening audience, they're not aware of what exactly Terry wrote, let me help them out. One of the most thrilling and thought-provoking novels I've read in years, Bernice McFadden is truly a welcomed voice in the literary world. Now, you know, that's walking in high cotton right there. That's walking in high cotton. But, you know, now let's move on to some of your other books that are equally fabulous as Sugar, but when you followed it up with This Bitter Earth, tell us a little bit about that.
So This Bitter Earth was actually my third book. The Warmest December came in between that.
Right.
I did not have I did not believe that I was going to write a sequel to Sugar. I thought the story was done. But the thing was, when I started submitting Sugar to different editors and agents, it was a much bigger book. And
really?
Yeah, it was a bigger book. And, I can't remember her name right now. It'll come to me probably later. But there was an editor who came back to me. Well, she wasn't an editor. She was PR. But she was trying to be an editor. And she came back to me and she said, listen, this is a great book, but she said, you have something that a lot of first time novelists have. And I said, well, what is that? She said, first novelitis. You're so eager, you want to put everything and anything in this book. She's like, you got to shear it down by about 100 pages. And so I did that. But those 100 pages that I took out, I didn't toss away, I put aside. And so Sugar is out, it does well, The Warmest December is on its way out, and I'm now starting to write another book, but the characters from Sugar are really, you know, kind of bullying themselves into this new novel. And I'm like, well, you don't belong here. And after a few months of fighting, I just surrendered and started writing the sequel, and a lot of what I had taken out of sugar, I put into this bitter earth.
Okay. Okay. Now, I know you wrote The Keeper of the Keys,
mm-hmm.
but another one that, another fabulous book, but another one with that kind of grabbed me from, like, the first page was Gathering of Waters.
Oh.
How did that come about?
You know, and you can contest to this, Pat. So Emmett Till.
Yes.
Emmett Till was like a family member.
Well, hold on. Let me just stop you right there.
Uh-huh.
How did you give life and voice to water?
I can't, I am so in awe
of that. And I didn't mean to cut you off, but I just wanted to get that out there. How do you do that? You made that scene come alive. I mean, if I didn't know I was reading about water, I still can't explain it. So I'm going to let you go ahead and do your thing.
I'm not going to be able to explain it. It's like, I say this a lot, it's just a magical thing. I think there are writers who can sit down and plot everything out. They write an outline and they stick to it and they create the book. That's not how I write.
Me either.
Yeah, see, I don't write that way. Like, whatever comes to me.
I'm a seat of the pants type of writer.
Yeah. Whatever comes to me, I put down. I don't write in a linear fashion, which is problematic a lot of the times. I just write whatever. So chapter one could be whatever. Chapter two may not have any connection to chapter one. But this is how I'm going to label everything. And when I get to the end, when I know I'm finished, I then piece everything together.
Mm-hmm.
So with Gathering of Waters, Emmett Till has been a part of my life since, I don't know, I was like 7 or 8 because of that Jet magazine. You know, every year they would publish that photo of him.
Yeah.
And it stuck with me. There are things that just stick with me. And, you know, I had been thinking about him and just thinking, like, what a loss. And when I started writing Gathering of Waters, the working title was Candle Street.
Really?
And, yeah, it was Candle Street. And it was about these, you know, three generations of women. And I'm writing and I'm writing. And sometimes I know where the story is going. More often than not, I don't know. And suddenly there was this boy on the bus with his kids. And I was like, well, who is this? And we're going and going and going. And after, you know, a few chapters, like, oh, my God, this is Emmett Till. And I just kept writing.
Well, let me just interrupt for just a moment. Because I need for the listening audience to really get a sense of what it is I'm trying to say or to describe. And this is a paragraph from chapter one from, Gathering of Waters. I am money, Mississippi. I have had many selves and have been many things. My beginning was not a conception, but the result of a growing, stretching, and expanding, which took place over thousands of years. Who writes like that about a place?
Nobody does that but you. That came later, because while I was writing the book, I didn't know, Pat, you tell me if you feel this way when you're writing. There's a voice I have in my head. For the majority of the books, the voice has a feminine energy. While I was writing Gathering of Waters, I wasn't really feeling that. And then I thought, oh, you know, maybe it's a male energy. And again, it wasn't ringing authentic to me. So I had to take a few weeks, and I stepped away. And I ask, I'm vocal. I'm like, who's telling this damn story? And that's when that opening chapter came to me. It was money.
But when you followed it up with, I have been figments of imaginations, shadows and sudden movements seen out of the corner of your eye. I have been dewdrops, falling stars, silence, flowers, and snails. Girl, you even snuck a second person in there? I had to go back and read it again. I said, what? See, that's mastery. That you have to be a master in order to do that, because you're so caught up that you may not even realize that you're talking about an inanimate object, and you gave it life.
Ladies, can I say something? This is Beverly, and I absolutely must. I'm so amazed at this conversation, because now it's woven itself into a cross-section between myself, Beverly Black, a.k.a. Beverly Black Johnson. I am also the creator of Gumbo for the Soul Publications, and the reason why I wanted to bring up or cut in at this moment, Sister Bernie, Sister Bernice, Money, Mississippi, is one of the places where my client, Dr. Thelma Battle Buckner, used to live. She will be 85 years old tomorrow.
God bless
God bless her. Battle, Mississippi is named after her family, but when she lived in Money, Mississippi, they lived in the house that Emmett Till's grandfather owned and uncle owned, and the house that Emmett Till was kidnapped from.
What?
Before,
Yes,
before the occurrence. And so I published The Battle of a Daytime Nightmare by Dr. Thelma Battle Buckner on her 81st birthday. If you go to gumballforthesoul.com and you click on memoirs, you're going to see her story. Her family is rife. Her family spans from Battle, Mississippi, Money, Mississippi, all the way up to Minnesota. Now, with the mentioning of Minnesota, I'm going to go ahead and say, you know, Rain and Purple Prince. I'm in communication with Gary Hines from the Sounds of Blackness and a few other people that have been in touch with Sheila E. and Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam. But I'm not going to go any further outside of saying that we are going to have a show that honors Prince, that ties in those folks that knew him. And that's going to be happening on May 2nd when we launch Soul School Music Mondays. But back to this conversation, if you also visit tribefamilychannel.com and you click on I Have a Dream, or you can click on Voices of Wisdom, and you will see 6 months worth of programming for the book drop of The Battle of a Daytime Nightmare by Dr. Thelma Battle Buckner. Alex Haley told her to finish her story because her story starts where Ruth ends.
Wow.
And on the back of her book is a picture of her brother, and who's a pastor, standing with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Now, last but not least, Sister Bernice, Emmett Till's cousin was on our show. And at some point, I'm going to make a connection between the two of you and then have you let that moment happen in time. But I just wanted you to know that she was on our show, and there's a tie-in with Emmett Till, his actual family member, Deborah Watkins, being on Tribe Family Channel, and that Money, Mississippi is an area where my client lived, and in Emmett Till's grandfather's
That's
house.
That's fascinating. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Is that not
fascinating?
6 degrees
of separation.
Yes.
Woo. And two more things before we go. Her cousin sits on Obama's cabinet in the African Union, Dr. Michael Battle. And also her nephew is President Morehouse Emeritus Dr. Robert Franklin. But back to your show, that just goes to show history and the tie-in. And so with you, with this interplanetary connection with Emmett Till, you just don't know how full circle you are. All right, ladies, enjoy yourselves.
Oh, my. See, you know what? What she just did is the reason why you and I don't make outlines. It don't never work. Not for me. fabulous. That was fabulous.
Yes.
See, there's a reason why you write the way you write. Now, we left off at Gathering of Waters, and then it was Glorious.
Well, so Glorious came before Gathering of Waters, and I had been – so when Glorious came about, I think I started working on Glorious back in, like, 2006 or 2007, and things were getting a little wonky with the publishing industry. We had the financial crash in 2008, and that was it. No one would touch me. I could not sell Glorious. I mean, it probably received just as many rejection letters as Sugar did. I had one prominent agent that I had a conversation with, and she said, oh, yeah, I love your work. What are you writing? And I told her, I said, well, the novel is finished. I didn't have an agent at that point. And she said, oh, you should send it to me. She said, but how many people have you sent it to? And at that point, it must have been 25 or 30. And she said, oh, don't send it to me. Something must be wrong with it.
Wow.
I was like, okay. Fine. And in my head, I was like, okay, if no one picks this up by May of, 2009, I'm just going to go on ahead and self-publish it. But thankfully, Akashic Books, which is right here in Brooklyn, homegrown Brooklyn publishing company, read it, loved it, and I've been with Akashic ever since, in 6 years.
That is fabulous. Now, you have a way with titles.
Oh.
Nowhere is a place.
Yeah.
That title sort of reminded me of J. California Cooper and her titles.
You know I love her.
Me too.
She
was energetic, funny.
Yes.
And when she told me she was a fan of Sister Betty, I was ready
See?
To just jump up and start shouting right then and there. I didn't think she had ever heard of me.
I got to share a story about her. So I'm writing, I'm this young woman and I'm writing, and I in my head I'm hearing these voices, but I'm not sharing that with anybody because then, that you're labeled as crazy.
Well, as long
and
as
I'm
you
reading
don't
her.
Answer back, it's cool.
So I'm reading her, and I'm in love with this woman, and I went to see her at a little bookstore here in Brooklyn. It was packed. A girlfriend of mine took me. It was my first book signing ever. Maybe I was 27. And I'm standing at the back of this tiny bookstore, and she's up there. And she was old for a long time, it seems to me.
I know,
like,
right?
She was old for a long time. And she got up there, but she was just the truth. I mean, she was just down to earth and everything.
Energetic.
And she said, the guides bring the stories to me. And I just write down what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they leave for a month or two or three or five. And I just wait, and they come back, and they finish telling me the story. She said, because I know they have other people that they have to deal with. I'm not the only one. And I was stunned. I was like, that's how I felt. I was like,
yes.
I feel the same way. And no one had ever, articulated that, not in public. I went home and I wrote her a letter and I told her, I was this aspiring author and blah, 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 blah. So, life goes on. And about 6 months later, I come home from work and I play my answering machine and there's her voice.
Oh, my goodness.
And she's like, I got your letter. I can't remember if I responded. But, baby, you just keep writing. It's going to happen. You keep on writing. And, listen, that's all any artist needs is someone to give them a few words of encouragement. And then I got
to
meet her years later, and I actually blurbed one of her books. And that, I was like, that was the highlight of my career, one of the highlights of my career, absolutely.
I know. I met her on one of the literary cruises.
That's where I met her.
Wait, were we on the same one in 2000 or something like that?
It might have been that one, yes.
Pam Williams crew?
And Paris, her daughter, was there.
Yes, Paris was with her.
Yep.
Girl, now, you have to forgive me because, you know, I'm old. I don't know what your excuse is, but I'm claiming my oldness. Speaking of oldness, I remember going to one of your book signings in Brooklyn, and I have to share this with you. It has nothing to do with your books, but you really made a fan out of my husband.
Oh.
And you know how you did it?
How?
Those strawberries. Girl, do you remember those strawberries?
I do. I know exactly what book signing you're talking. I remember this because I walked in. I hadn't seen you for years, and I didn't realize it was you. And it was for the 10th anniversary for Sugar. I remember. At Brownstone Books, right
at
in Bedside, right in my
Books.
Old neighborhood.
Yes. Well,
and I had
the chocolate
covered strawberries.
With you and those strawberries. He talked about you and those strawberries all the way back home to Long Island. I said, if I didn't know any better.
I'm glad.
And remember, I think I got in touch with you to ask you, where did you get those strawberries? Because I want to tell you something. It made my night.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to help.
Me too. Now, back to the clean version of the show. I don't know what was in those strawberries. They were
the chocolate and the sugar.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. Yeah,
oh my goodness.
It was.
I don't even remember how many years ago that was. It was a while. Now, okay, so now we're coming down to Loving Donovan. What was that?
Yeah. So Loving Donovan, I think I published that in 2003. And, you know, I insert a lot of personal history into my novels, and that was a fictional account of a personal relationship I had that just kind of left me a bit stunned and dumbfounded. And that's just how I work things out. Like, you know, comedians work stuff out on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
I work stuff out on the page. And I wrote it, and it was clear to everybody who who was around and involved about, you know, who the story was about. And he got wind of it. I mean, you know, he was fine. He was fine. But I had to bleed on the page. And after I wrote the book, I felt better about it. I was like, oh. And now I look back, and I'm like, you know, you really weren't that important.
Right?
But maybe the universe said, this is a story you have to write. In order to write this story, we have to put you through the ringer.
Well, because somebody else was going through the ringer. I've come to learn that no matter what we write, what we think about it is always important to somebody.
Absolutely.
It is
Absolutely.
Healing or a message for somebody. I have characters. I have one character, Deacon Thurgood Pillar. I tried to give it to that nutcase for the longest. I went online for something, and they had the series, and they had renamed it the Deacon Thurgood Pillar series. I said, this ain't got nothing to do with him. But it was one of those characters, you know, that kind of took over. So I said, okay, well, you know, if you say so, who am I to argue with this chick?
Mm-hmm. That's the magical part of it. You know, I'm ensconced in my own little world while I'm writing. And honestly, and I think readers might feel kind of weird about this, but I'm not thinking about my readers when I'm writing. I'm only thinking about the characters.
Yes, because
I'm not
the characters are you. The characters are you. At
yeah,
any
you,
given
you're
moment, you are
shoes.
In that character's shoes. And I know for me, especially with the Sister Betty series, I have to step back sometime and leave those old church mothers and some of those other crazy church nuts alone. Yes, I will take them to the store with me. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
They will hop in the car at a moment's notice.
It's and people who don't have the gift, if I could call it that.
You aren't as
they
crazy as we are.
It. Right.
How many times have you, or I know I have, had to just pull over and write down something because one of the characters would not shut up?
Well, I haven't. I'm starting now to write stuff down. I used to be able to remember everything, but
that's changed.
But what I do is when a story starts coming to me, it's almost like you and I having this conversation, and I start responding like,
Right.
Oh, is that what's going to happen? All right. And if I'm sitting, you know, family members looking like, who are you talking to? Oh, I didn't realize
even talk about family. Nobody in my house is allowed to throw away a napkin, an envelope.
Yep. That's right.
A book cup.
Nothing.
I write on everything.
Everything. Mm-hmm.
Everything.
It's really very interesting.
Well, now
we're not easy to live with, I think.
No, I know I'm not. That's why I was blessed with the best husband, because he would just leave me alone.
Right.
And because he knew, you know, that I needed to be in a certain space to write.
Exactly. That's right.
So he would just leave me alone. You would never know that my husband was out there, you know, working with the bomb factory and the Joint Terrorist Task Force and, you know, hunting down terrorists and whatnot.
Right.
Because he was so quiet, he always left me alone.
See, you got the perfect mate. I have not met that man yet.
Oh, I had him.
I hope
to
meet.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, my husband passed away almost 3 years ago.
I know.
But yet, honey, let me tell you something. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, let me get back to you, because I could save my stuff for my show. Now, we're down to Camilla's Roses.
Mm-hmm.
And now, one of the things I wanted to ask you, I know you have a lot of new things on the horizon. One of the things that I'm really excited about, and I can only imagine how excited you must be, is the award, the honor that you will be receiving this summer in Atlanta from EDC Creations.
I was so
happy for you.
Thank you. And, oh, my goodness, I get emotional. Because, I don't know, let me ask you, when you started writing, is that something you even thought about? I mean, was just so...
No,
it just
not
came
at all.
Out of left field. I was like, lifetime achievement. And you know,
received...
the first thing I thought, am I going to die?
That's the first thing
that came to my mind.
You know what, we're sitting here talking, and I'm looking at my Lifetime Achievement Award. That came from out of left field. I had no idea what they were talking about, and it was presented to me by Tressa Stovall. And I'm saying, what? Why is she talking about me? What did I do now? I had no idea, but no, I never thought about, you know.
You don't think about
anything.
Those things.
No, because, you know, when I started out, I started with a little 22-page booklet.
Like a chapbook.
Right. You know, that's what I started out with. And God blessed me to get a major publishing deal from it.
That's right.
So, no, I didn't think about awards. The first time I hit the Essence bestseller list, I didn't know. Deborah Owsley called and told me to congratulate me. And I said, what are you talking about? No idea, because I'm on to the next thing.
See,
because
and
the characters
don't stop.
They don't stop running their mouths.
That's right. You're just on to the next thing. I'm like, I'm on. I mean, listen, my new book is out, and obviously I have to help publicize it, but I'm already like, I'm so over this because
need
to sit down and write.
I will just come into that. The Book of Harlan. The whole concept, Nazis and Germany, and I don't even know where to start. The conversation with the two young girls in the beginning, and once again, I don't know how you do it.
That story started percolating way back in 2004. That's how long that story was sitting with me. And I, you know, how many books have I published between 2004 and now? I learned about blacks in these internment camps from a self-published author who came to visit Brownstone Books. I got the email. I was like, oh, this is interesting. And I think most black folk, that's just like beyond, I'm like, wait, what? Black people win? It makes perfect sense.
Well, yeah, because I know my father. My father, not to cut you off, but my father was a medic. And he was one of the medics that that was involved in the release of a lot of prisoners from Auschwitz, and you know,
wow.
And there was all kinds of people. It wasn't just Jews.
Well, see,
it was
that,
gypsies.
But this is what we've
it was
been
blacks.
Taught.
It was all kinds of people.
Anything that didn't fit into Hitler's master,
right?
Race.
His blonde, blue-eyed, you know,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so I was fascinated by that, but I didn't know how I was going to approach the story. I knew it was going to be a lot of research. I knew it was going to be really a great undertaking. And so I just let it, you know, I allowed it to simmer for years. But I kept thinking and I kept collecting information. I was buying a lot of books and I'm printing stuff off of the internet. And, you know, halfway through Glorious, it was like, it's time. It's time to start writing it. And I started picking at it, and I wrote, you know, Gathering of Waters. But by the time Gathering of Waters was published, I had 2 feet in. And it was like, okay, so this is going to be the next book.
Well, I tell you, the book cover was so deceiving to me, but in a good way, because I had no idea, just judging from the book cover, how deep the book was.
Can I tell you, that's my grandfather.
Really?
So I got to tell you the story really quickly because I just love this story. So that's my paternal grandfather. My father did not know his dad, Harold McFadden. That's my grandfather. He was a miscreant. He was a drug seller or whatever you want to call it. He was in pharmaceuticals. And he was a musician. He was also a musician. And so my father knew nothing about him. My grandmother didn't talk about him because she was heartbroken. But I started doing my family research about 20, 25 years ago. And a little bit here, a little bit there. Anyway, my grandmother died. My father died. I had all these photos and papers and stuff. And I would go through these photos and papers every few months. I'd pull out the bin and just sift through them. Now, I had this stuff for a number of years. And one day, that photo that's on the book, the bottom half fell out of nowhere, like magic, like from the sky. I was like, wait, what is this? So I started going through everything again. I had everything spread all over the floor, and I found the top half. And there he was, Harold McFadden. And there was a signature to, you know, my love, Gwen, which is my grandmother. And I was like, oh, my God, here's my grandfather. And no one had ever seen a photo of him. And I held on to it. And so this book was written, Book of Harlan's written, and we're looking at different artwork for the cover. And I sent the photo to my publisher. I said, oh, you know, by the way, this is my grandfather. This is who Harlan is modeled after. I wasn't even thinking this was going to be the cover. I just wanted him to see. And he's like, I love this photo. It should be the cover.
Wow. I mean, that's why I said in a good way it was kind of deceiving, because the story is so rich.
Thank
and here you.
You
have this man on the cover that you could tell it's a vintage picture.
Yes.
But it kind of made me want to say, now I know what the concept is, but what does he have to do with the concept? You know.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've got to open the book because I'm nosy enough to want to know what does he have to do with the concept? You know. And it was just fabulous. But listen, I know time is winding up, but I still got some more stuff I got to talk to you about. I got to talk to you about it. Okay. Tell us something we don't know.
About me personally?
Yes.
What don't you know?
Well, you know, I know it because I've been stalking you for a while with the other people.
Oh, okay. I'm a mother.
Yes, and
I
have a 28-year-old
daughter. That's something that many folk may not know.
Does she write?
Does she write? She writes very well. She hates people who ask her that. Do you write? Are you going to write like your mother? So she says no, but she writes very well. I don't know what else to say. I mean, I love to travel. I love to read, although I got to tell you that I have, and unfortunate for me, I have not been able to read a lot of fiction these past few years because I'm always reading a lot of nonfiction for my novels.
Research, uh-huh.
Yeah, lots of research. But I promised myself, I'm like, you know, for the next 10 months, I'm going to catch up on my reading. So I've been listening to audiobooks.
Oh.
Exercising. And
exercise?
That's yeah, that's something
fabulous.
Else. I try.
I got
whenever
a dog, and I said, okay,
a little
this
thick,
dog,
I'm like, it's time to start.
This dog is going to make me exercise, right? Please.
See,
I
yep.
put a pad over there in the corner, tell him, go pee.
Ooh,
go pee.
Pad.
Look, I got stuff to do. I ain't got time to be out here walking no more.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Well, dear, listen, tell us how we can, you know, get in touch with you, your website, your Twitter, your Facebook, whatever you need to tell us. And,
okay.
And what else you got happening, coming up?
Well,
you know,
okay,
the rest
so my
of them
website,
need to know.
Okay, so my website is www.BerniceMcFadden.com. I'm on Facebook under my name, Bernice McFadden. On Twitter, I'm sure you could just put in Bernice McFadden. My Twitter page will come up, but my handle is Queen Aja, and that's A-Z like zebra, S-A. I'm also on Pinterest. I'm on Instagram. I'm very active on social media. I have a number of cities I'll be hitting this
oh, wonderful.
Spring and summer to promote the Book of Harlan, and also the Book of Harlan just received a fabulous review from the Washington Post. It's,
yeah.
it's online, but it will be in the May 1st paper edition, so I'm happy about that. And, you know, I'm trying to, as my Caribbean folks say, I'm trying to make myself happy.
Well, it looks like your picture is every place but in the post office. It ain't in the post office, is it?
But if you're in the post office, that's not a good thing, is it?
I know.
They're looking for you if you're in the post office. You got warrants.
Well, my dear, I have thoroughly enjoyed. I have wanted to do this for so long.
Thank
and,
you
know,
so
like
much,
I said,
man.
I've loved you long time.
I love you, too.
And
I
want to
share really quickly. I know we don't
okay.
have a lot of time.
That's okay.
But I got to say that, listen, to our listeners out there, you have to read Pat's books, but you have to experience her. It's a completely different thing. You have to experience that. Just reading it, yes, okay, we all have our imagination, but you got to see it. You got to hear it.
Yes,
you
I
are
am
hilarious.
An event.
Like ladies, people, you know what?
What?
Go ahead. Like you tell people.
I tell people all the time. Don't y'all know who I think I am?
Ladies, it is just an honor and a privilege to witness these friends and these conversations and the memories that you're sharing and the laughs. So I really, really want to thank you. This is Beverly once again for our listeners, the creator of Tribe Family Channel, and you have just witnessed history. Bernice L. McFadden and Sister Pat Georgie Walker, and they are, as you can see, lit friends, sisterin, and this was magic. So, again, I want to thank you, Miss Bernice, and I want to thank Sister Pat Georgie Walker, the sponsor of this episode of Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival. I want to thank all of our previous guests and sponsors, and that would be Jackie J.C. Gardner, Electa Rome Parks. We had E.N. Joy Ross, Joylyn Ross. We had Patricia Bridewell. Sister Pat Georgie Walker was going to be a guest, but when I learned that she was such a fan and a sister of yours, Bernice McFadden. I said, oh no, you're gonna have to co-host. I can't even do it. And so when we come back next year for our Literary Festival 3, maybe we can flip the script and have Bernice McFadden interview Sister Pat Georgie Walker.
Oh my goodness.
How does that sound,
lady? That would be fun.
All right. Well, I'm going to hold both of you to that. Now, Sister Pat Georgie Walker, where can our listeners find you online?
Every place but the post office. They can find me on Facebook. It's Pat Sister Betty Georgie Walker. They can go to my website, www.SisterBetty.com. They can find me on YouTube. Some of my performances are on YouTube. Twitter is P. Gorge Walker. I'm on Instagram. I think it's Comedy Queen. I don't know. I'm old. I can't remember
you know
all that
what?
Stuff.
He's Googleable, y'all. Just
there
like
you go.
Beverly, yours
right.
Truly. Tribe Family Channel. And again, I want to thank you ladies once again. And you can find me at Gumbo for the Soul International, www.gumboforthesoul.com. We have our calls for submissions that are currently open. You can find a host of different subjects and content in which you can submit to, and also at Tribe Family Channel. com, and you can scroll down our list of about 10 other hosts and shows with which you could listen to. And then lastly, I am also on Twitter at Tribe Family Channel and also at Gumbo for the Soul. We have a special show, like I said, coming up May 2nd, which we will be honoring Mr. Prince Rogers Nelson. We have friends and family that, well, I won't say family, but we have friends that are like his family that have close relationship, that have had a close relationship with him, both musically and personally, and we want to invite all of you to join us. It is co-hosted by the last man standing, Mr. Marshall Thompson of the Shy Lights, and yours truly, Beverly. And so until then, my friend, be blessed, and make sure that you keep love in the midst.
Thank you,
amen.
Beverly. Thank you, Pat. Love you guys.
Love you too. Bye-bye.
Thank you, ladies.
Where? Tri-Family Channel. Tri-Family Channel.